are the best unknown. UFOs, aliens, ghosts, Bigfoot, conspiracies and cover-ups. And to the paranormal we go
with Jeremy Scott.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I greet you on this Saturday into Sunday for some on Into the Paranormal. A program entitled High Strangeness for a variety of reasons. I found it fitting. Tonight we're going to be talking with Trey Hudson. You know, over the decades we have heard of places where, you know, the energy feels different. I talked a little bit about this last week on the program. The energy just feels a little different. It opens up, a portal. Weird stuff happens. And seemingly in locations more than others, if you want to call them epicenters. Well, these strange occurrences in places like the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, probably the most known. But tonight we're going to bring light to a not-so-well-known hotspot of the paranormal and the strange. It is a remote site in America's Southland that has come to be known as The Meadow. Has a history of astounding events with UFOs, cryptid beasts, mysterious beings, portals, missing time, crop circles, men and women in black, orbs, strange beams of lights, a lot of other oddities. So Trey Hudson has compiled the research regarding The Meadow, and along with his field notes and those of other people who've investigated and researched this site, many years worth, into a book. It's called The Meadow Project, Explorations into the South's Skinwalker Ranch. He's director of the Oxford Paranormal Society and the Anomalous Studies and Observation Group. He studied at the University of West Georgia, where he completed his bachelor's degree in psychology and was granted a minor in anthropology. He was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army Reserve, branched as military intelligence. After college, he worked as a private investigator and was certified as an intelligence officer. He served a tour in Afghanistan as an operations and anti-terrorism officer. Trey entered federal government service as a security specialist, where he received training and experience in intelligence analysis, security of weapons of mass destruction, anti-terrorism, counterintelligence, emergency management, response to chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high-yield explosives incidents. He has many certifications and medals for his service and expertise. He's a disabled veteran after an injury ended his military career. We thank you for your service. But, Trey, what an amazing set of events that you write about in the book.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm just really happy to have these opportunities to share these amazing experiences. I've mentioned to so many people that these experiences don't belong to myself, you know, or my team. These are the world's experiences. And the more that we are able to get information out about these anomalous hotspots and can compare notes, maybe we can, you know, just start to scratch a millimeter, you know, through the veneer and actually see the truth lurking underneath.
What kinds of things are we talking about here, Trey?
Oh, gosh, you know, the whole cornucopia of weirdness. Yeah, you kind of touched on some of the stuff. We've had UFOs, cryptid beasts, missing time. We had one of our team members was observed through our thermal equipment turn into a sphere of light or a sphere of energy and move at inhuman speeds. We've had a portal. We have video of our team approaching the remnants of a portal, which strangely as stuff manifested itself as a cube. And we have a video of our team members, you know, actually disappearing into the remnants of this cube, which to my knowledge is a first, ever recorded on video. We've had a woman in black kind of experience, missing, like I said, missing time and just all kinds of strange things, orbs, lights in the forest, downloads, you name it. This is one of the probably the weirdest places I've ever been to in my life.
Trey, very interesting that you bring up the whole video of a portal, because I have been talking about this subject at length for quite some time, and you know, using it as kind of a blanket explanation to a lot of paranormal happenings. And I've heard very similar accounts of people entering these portals, whether it be in, you know, in the forest or the backwoods or whatnot. And here you actually have video. This is fascinating. Listen up, folks. Can you tell us about this one, Trey?
Basically, what we were doing, this was back in February of 2017. We were doing operations there in the meadow. And let me kind of paint a picture of what the meadow is. Imagine a 4-acre mountain meadow. Very beautiful, very pristine, very bucolic. Somewhere you'd want to take your family for a picnic. Certainly the last place you would expect to have a whole barrel full of, high strangeness, get dumped on your head. But we decided in February of 2017 to conduct operations in the meadow, and we had three teams set up with FLIR, thermal vision devices. And my team set up in the middle of the meadow, radioed me and said that they started to see something that started to manifest itself much like a cube. Now, you got to remember, these are picking up differences in temperature, not visible light. So whatever this thing was had a temperature variance that was just off a little bit from the background heat of the surroundings. And it formed a cube or a box. And it was about 10 meters by 6 meters by 6 meters. So it was pretty large, 18 foot, 18 foot, 30 foot. And it had a almost like a cruciform type marker adjacent to the box. And my team member is relaying this on the radio. Hey, we've got this strange thing forming up. We're trying to record it on video. By the time we got our video turned on our thermals, it started to dissipate, but we can still see a very faint outline. Yeah, you need to come over and look at it. So we dispatched a team over there, and we were discussing where it was and decided to actually dispatch to vector a team into where this thing was. And when the team got to the area where this cube or this box was, as they entered the edge of it, they completely disappeared off of our FLIR equipment. What's really interesting is we went back and did a daytime recreation of that in the same time of year, February. And the vegetation is so sparse in this area that you can actually see through the trees, across a creek, to a ridge, up to the top of the ridge, visibly. So there's no way that their thermal energy could have been completely masked. When we did an after-action review with the team later, we asked them, describe, experientially what exactly did you feel? And they described it as though there was a black velvet curtain draped around them. It was very dark, and the temperature was colder, which would explain the thermal equipment picking up the temperature variance. And when they went into this area, they did not encounter any encumbrances. They didn't run into any brambles or bushes, briars, branches, anything like that. It was a smooth transition into this area. They spent a little bit of time in there. Then when they moved back out, much to their chagrin, they started running into these things. They were getting hung up on dead briars and branches, entangling their feet, things that weren't there when they went in. So the environment had shifted just a little bit. It changed, and it returned back to normal by the time they came out. And I don't know if you had a chance to look at the video that I sent you, but it's video, let's see, it's video 341 at about the 4:27 mark. So It was really amazing, and we were so excited when we were able to capture this on video that we actually got back to our camp, put the SD cards into RF foil packets, took one of our members' and gave him these SD cards and sent him away, you know, because we didn't want to run into the typical thing that you have at these sites where things get erased or equipment fails or you have electronic malfunctions. We wanted him to get this critical, amazing footage as far away from this place as possible. So he got on his motorcycle and rode several hours back to his home and locked it up in a safe.
So there you go, audience, is exactly what I've talked about, where you would literally disappear and not be seen by someone else. You might enter a situation in which time does slow down, temperatures change. Maybe the survival elements that we need here on this side are not the same as what they are on that side, because... you know, in a lot of cases, Trey, we hear of people who go missing and then are found many hours later, yet, you know, they don't return malnourished.
Right. You know, and it's strange that you should mention people, you know, becoming disoriented, because that's been something that we've experienced at this site also, albeit at a much, at a different time. You know, it was almost like a, you know, David Pilates missing 401 kind of thing. If we hadn't had our safety protocols in effect, it could have ended up very, very differently.
Yeah. And so in this situation, they obviously made it out of the portal.
Absolutely. They you know, they made it back out, and we were able to get back to our campsite and our base camp rather, and do a very detailed after action review, you know, using a using an interview process. And, you know, we were able to capture as much of this data, not only empirically, you know, using, you know, our FLIR footage, but also experientially using the, you know, the interview and after action review process.
So I'm interested in any of the other observations that you may have obtained from those interviews and observations of the time spent in the portal, and then what it was like, you know, directly after.
Yeah, you know, they there was no ill effects. You know, nobody was, you know, suffered any, you know, they no nausea, no headaches, nothing like that. But they did describe, you know, the temperature dropped while they were in there. They did say it was very dark, and the environment was different going in than it was coming out. Now, what's very interesting is in subsequent investigations of this area, during some other events of high strangeness, we have detected very tiny radiation spikes. You know, we take Geiger counters and radiation detectors out with us, and, you know, we've seen things like the normal background radiation in that area is about 0.06 microsieverts per hour, you know, which is a pretty basic, you know, very low background radiation. And then when we have some of these strange events happen, we've seen it jump anywhere from 0.12 microsieverts per hour to 0.66 microsieverts per hour. So, you know, we're starting to, you know, pick up other empirical data when these high strangeness events happen.
And so what that means that there are higher readings of radiation that could be, you know, harmful to humans, you know, getting too close, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, 0.6, you know, microsieverts per hour isn't dangerous. You know, it's not something that you need to be concerned about. It's just interesting that, you know, if you look at it, you know, empirically, it is a significant change of background radiation that cannot be explained. But it's not dangerous. You know, those levels are relatively benign.
Wow. This is just fascinating, because I've always been wondering, you know, what it would be like to be in a situation like that. I've told about the story of what it was like to almost enter a portal and for one to pull their foot out of it and prevent themselves from going into the portal. And so here you have a situation where, well, that exactly happens. Of course, you're darn right I'm going to ask questions about that. Sure. So what can you tell us about this location? I mean, we know it's in America's Southland. What can you disclose about it, Trey?
And I'm going to go ahead and do a mea culpa here, is I have made the decision, along with my team, to keep this location secret. And that was something we really agonized over. And I really had to give it a lot of thought when I wrote the book. And the reason I made that decision, and I hope, you know, your listeners will understand, is whenever these unique, amazing, and very special places are disclosed to the public as far as their exact location. They are absolutely inundated with people.
Yeah.
And not all of the people that come to these sites are there for benevolent purposes. You have thrill seekers, you have vandals, you have people who want to hoax situations. So we've decided to keep this this area secret. And about all I really will disclose is it is somewhere east of Arizona and south of the Mason-Dixon line. Now, that being said, I do have guest researchers come out with me from time to time, and they are required to sign a non-disclosure agreement. There are some, you know, pretty big names in the, you know, out in the community that have been to the site or have knowledge of it, and all of them to a person have signed a non-disclosure statement. And that's just a way to keep it pristine, to keep it inviolate, so we can continue to gather data, you know, and maybe get a little bit closer to the truth as we continue to research this area.
Yeah, that's important as well, because too many people, too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, can ruin evidence and a variety of other reasons if you're dealing with entities. You know, do you find that they are that what you're dealing with here is more responsive at a certain time of year, time of day? Does it matter?
That's a good question. This area is very lushly vegetated, and what we have found is our research usually yields better results during the winter time for a couple of reasons. Number one, you have this is on public land. In the book, I call it the Blackwater Nature Preserve. So, you know, it is a public piece of property. So you have less people there during the wintertime. You also have less vegetation. So our thermal equipment and our night vision equipment have much greater ranges with less vegetation. And also the ambient temperature is colder. So anything giving off a heat signature will have a much, much greater contrast through our thermal equipment. So we've had, you know, really good luck during the wintertime. So, you know, we try to, you know, go out there during all times of the year, and we're continuing to research. We were just there a few months ago, and I plan on going out later on this month. But, you know, we really, our sweet spot for research is during the winter months.
You said this is public land, Trey?
Yes, sir. It is public land.
Okay. And so there are no restrictions to accessing the land. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right.
It is public land.
All right. And so does the government, does any official office, bureau know about the happenings here?
Strange you should mention that. We have talked to Department of Natural Resource Rangers that are responsible for patrolling and enforcing, you know, this area. I know the game wardens and stuff like that. And this area has a very rich history of strangeness, you know, going back well before, you know, I became aware of it. And there's been numerous Sasquatch sightings, you know, Bigfoot sightings in this area, and the rangers will talk about that. It has a kind of a grisly history, and I don't mean the bear history. I mean grisly as in, you know, violent. Is there have been bodies found there. There's been multiple murders, you know, things like that. So it has a dark history. It also has a history of UFOs, orbs, and strange flashes and lights in the forest. So it was an epicenter of high strangeness, and the locals and the government officials responsible for this were aware of it before I ever entered the scene.
Speaking of the flashes of lights, do you think that there might be some connection to what is going on with some of these other events, say, of these Bigfoots and other beings, the flashes of lights and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What's really neat, and I'm starting to see a little bit of a opening up of information coming from the various disciplines. It used to be that your Bigfoot guys, your cryptid researchers, the guys and gals that would look for the, you know, the gigantopithecus running around in the forest, would never talk about the paranormal aspect or the UFO aspect or the high strangeness aspect mm-hmm. of, you know, these kind of encounters. They just, you know, they were really locked into their box. It was really strange. I had gone to a Bigfoot conference, albeit as a paranormal researcher, which was kind of an oddball, but, you know, I was kind of, you know, given the stink eye, you know, while I was at this conference. But then during the break times, these researchers would come up to me and they say, hey, I don't want anyone to know about this that I'm talking to you, but let me tell you what happened to me. And you start finding out that flashes of light in the forest and orbs in the trees and you know, disembodied voices, all of this stuff is very, very prevalent. And so I started, you know, doing some research into this area. And if you do the same kind of research in other areas, you'll see the same thing. And as you alluded to earlier, I'm a old Army intelligence guy, you know, back during the Cold War. We were very low tech back then. And the way we would do our intelligence preparation of the battlefield is we would take a map, you know, a large military map, and we would lay acetate plastic overlays over and take a grease pencil and mark on it. And you would have different overlays tracking different things, the enemy movements, enemy positions, our positions, things like that. So I want you to kind of picture that in your mind, you know, of a map up on a wall with plastic, you know, clear plastic overlays.
And what a mental image and a stopping point with Trey Hudson. So we'll pick up exactly there when we return. High strangeness tonight, taking a ride into the paranormal. I'm Jeremy Scott. 855-790-8255, toll-free is our number in North America. That's 855-790-TALK or 503-506-0396 outside North America and on Skype at ITP51. I'm with Trey Hudson, and we'll be back.
Paranormal News, I'm Brad Bernards. Will Congress finally end the stigma of UFOs and UAPs?
The 2022 National Defense Authorization Act was passed by the House of Representatives last week. It would create a new office under the Defense Secretary to collect and analyze UAP reports to determine if the encounters pose a threat to the United States. If adopted by the Senate, the office must be created within 180 days and report to Congress once a year, with the first briefing due no later than December 31st of 2022. Politico reports that Representative Ruben Gallego of Arizona put in the new provision, saying he feels the current system is insufficient. Government officials claim the phenomenon pose a critical flight safety issue to both civilian and military craft, and that the reporting, collecting, and analyzation of UAP data needs to be vastly improved.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the NSA. We're going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. That's not our LNS, though, is it? It's not our LNS, dude. Well, if there's a lunar thing, it's rotating.
Many, like this 2004 encounter off the coast of California by U.S. Navy pilots from aboard the USS Nimitz, maneuver in ways that seem to defy aerodynamics. This office would replace the current UAP task force that was established last year. Daniel Brewer, Paranormal News.
China has confirmed the loss of its Xi'an satellite, despite an otherwise successful liftoff on Monday the 27th, according to Space.com. The spacecraft was China's second orbital launch of the day, following the Jilin-1 Gaofen-02D satellite, which was carried by a Kuwejo 1A rocket that lifted off from the Jiuquan Satellite Launch Center in northwest China. That spacecraft is reported to have entered orbit successfully. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. I'm Brad Bernards, Paranormal News.
A shapeshifter. It's a demonic being that can take on the shape of many different animals or the form of a human.
Video of a portal and people disappearing into that portal. FLIR footage of anomalous beings. UFO footage.
Sightings of humanoid figures in trees, reports of weird skin diseases, and unexplained headaches.
What is that?
We've got ourselves a skinwalker.
Is there intelligent life out there? Well, they'd probably be listening to this show. You're in good company. Into the paranormal.
It's High Strangeness on Into the Paranormal, and I'm Jeremy Scott, along with Trey Hudson. The book is called The Meadow Project. Explorations into the South's Skinwalker Ranch. And if you know Skinwalker Ranch, you know the kinds of stuff we're talking about. You may not know the location. What we've come to learn about it is it's, what, east of Arizona, and it is public land. We also know that tends to be the winter months in which they found that the activity to be more responsive. Is that being more responsive to a particular command of some sort, or just you witness the activity more, Trey?
You know, I think it's probably one of those things where it's perhaps more visible, you know, during the winter months because of the lack of vegetation. You know, it's one of those things, if a tree falls in the forest and you're not there to hear it, does it actually fall? You know, we can detect some of this phenomena a little bit easier with the equipment we have during the winter months due to the lack of vegetation.
Okay. And before the break, you were talking about your background.
Right.
And how you have come to use that in investigating this property. And so
right.
I'll let you continue, but basically you were mapping out, are you mapping out where certain activity takes place, or?
Right, right. If you take any of, you know, these places in the world and you take an overlay and you map out a brown dot for every time you see a cryptid, you know, Bigfoot, and then you take a new overlay and you do a blue dot for every time you have a ghost or paranormal type encounter, okay. You do a new overlay with a yellow dot for UFOs. And then you take all three of the acetate overlays and put them on top of one another, you're going to start to see clusters. And those are the areas where the real high strangeness is happening. And that is exactly what happened at this place, is we had, you know, a folkloric history of a ghost. We had, you know, UFO sightings and strange lights reported to MUFON and other organizations. And then you go into BFRO and some other, you know, outfits, and you start looking at Bigfoot sightings and Bigfoot reports, and you start to see a correlation of all of these, you know, all of these different weird events.
Yeah, and so as you put these clusters together, what, you start to get a sense that maybe there's some sort of connection between all of these different phenomena?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was actually on a Zoom call on Thursday evening with some pretty big names in the paranormal and high strangeness world, and we were discussing how do we go and look at these areas of high strangeness, both the ones that are well known and the ones that aren't, and start to drill down and start to look at correlations. You know, are there electromagnetic anomalies at these various sites? Are there gravitational anomalies? Are there temporal anomalies, i.e. time moves differently there? Are there reports of you know, ghosts? Are there reports of boxes or cubes? We're starting to see a correlation, believe it or not, with boxes, which, you know, that really makes no sense, but boxes or cubes have been reported at, obviously, in the meadow. They've been reported at Skinwalker Ranch. As recently as last season on the TV show, they saw one, you know, a golden rectangle, you know, at night. There is a very well-known case of a mysterious ranch in Colorado, which was talked about in some of the first chapters of George Knapp's book, Hunt for the Skinwalker. And I had a chance to talk to a person that had experience at that ranch, and there were numerous reports of boxes or cubes. If you go back and look at the Brazilian UFO flap of several years ago, they had something called Chupa Chupas, which were flying boxes that emitted beams of light that caused injury to various people. So there's something, you know, there's boxes are a correlation, orbs or another correlation, orbs and floating lights in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we're starting to see, you know, Sasquatch or humanoid type creatures. Now, you know, are these just different, you know, descriptions from a person's point of view? Does a Bigfoot guy see a humanoid and say it's a Bigfoot, and a ghost person sees a humanoid and says it's ghost, and a ufologist sees a humanoid and say it's an alien? You know, are they all seeing the same thing? But we're starting to see entities or humanoids. So you know, it's really, we're right on the apex of looking at all of these really unique happenings and maybe starting to see a correlation or commonalities that we can use to not only research the sites that we know, but maybe predict where some of the sites are that we don't know.
Okay, so are there any similarities or what might connect these points, like bodies of water or, you know, forested areas or, you know, wide open spaces or whatnot?
That's a good point. You know, let's go over some of the ones that we do know, okay? The meadow, you know, we've been discussing that. We know about that one. There's the ranch in Colorado. Once again, they don't tell you the exact location of that, but it is a ranch in a remote area of Colorado.
That's the one we talked about, the Clearview, I believe was the name that we talked about with Katie Grabowski at the UFO Fest last week, actually.
Actually, Katie was the one I was talking to last Thursday in the Zoom meeting. Yes.
Yeah, she is a pretty big deal. She's a pretty big deal. So once she started telling the story and she brought your name up, I'm like, wow, this is going to be good.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully she was nice. No, I'm kidding. No, Katie and I are good friends.
She can be a pain. No, just kidding.
No, I'm kidding. She's probably listening right now. No, you know, and she and I, it's strange that you should mention that, is she and I were at a conference in June. And, you know, I walked into the conference and set up my little table to, you know, talk to people and stuff. She came over. She goes, "You're Trey Hudson, aren't you?" And I go, "Yes, why?" She goes, "You and I have got to talk about the boxes, the cubes." So, you know, there you have that going on there. So we also have, we talked about Skinwalker Ranch, the Colorado Ranch, the Meadow. And now we go to places like the, and I'm going to butcher this, forgive me, I'm not Romanian, but the Haubacu Forest in Romania, you know, which has this really rich folklore of high strangeness and orbs at night and, you know, strange entities and things like that. You start looking at Mesa Verde, you know, the Mesa Verde cliff dwelling. Time runs a little bit differently there, and there are some magnetic anomalies there. James Keenan, I don't know if you've had a chance to meet him yet. His big thing is subsurface anomalies and magnetic anomalies. So do these places have magnetic anomalies? So what we're doing, you know, not only with my group, but other groups, is coming up with a set of experimental protocols where maybe we can start, you know, figuring out what some of the, you know, the commonalities are in these areas. And maybe, you know, maybe find one or two pieces of the puzzle and somewhere down the line find some more and start putting it together.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. It's all about solving the mystery. Let's go to a question here. Susan wants to know, again, this was a 4-acre size land of property. Is that correct, Trey?
Yeah. The meadow itself, the clearing itself is about 4 acres. It is in a many square miles public nature preserve. So it's you know, it's a mountain meadow in a much larger area. Now the cool thing is the high strangeness isn't just located in the meadow. We've gone out a few miles, you know, 7 miles out, and done some ancillary research and found high strangeness in other areas. It just seems a little bit more concentrated in the meadow. But we've been out, you know, 4 to 7 miles in different locations. We've seen, you know, cryptids, UFOs, flashes in the forest, disorientation, beams of light, you know, and all this kind of strange stuff in areas a few miles away from the meadow. So the whole, you know, the whole area, the whole region is kind of strange.
Interesting. And so you say men in black, women in black, what, while you've been out investigating, or after you've been to the place, have you felt their presence, Trey?
Oh, yeah. That's a very strange story. In February of 2017, when we had the amazing encounter with the cube or portal, once we got the team extracted, you know, from this area, and they were describing their experiences to us, my base camp operator radioed me. And the way we operate is we're not a militaristic organization, but we run things similar to that because a lot of us have military backgrounds. You know, we have a base camp operator, a net control officer, a tactical commander in the field, an operational commander for, you know, who's in control for the whole weekend. and we have strict radio protocols. We have team call signs and all that. So it's structured. So when my base camp operator called me and he said, "Hey, Trey, you know, there's somebody back at camp that needs to talk to you." And I said, "You know, Glenn, I'll be back, you know, here in a little bit. We're gathering up, doing a quick hot wash here. And I'll see you in a few minutes." He goes, "No, it's not me. It's somebody else." Well, okay, I'll be there as soon as I can. And so we made the quarter mile hike back to base camp. And when I arrived, much to my surprise, there was a businesswoman waiting for me. Now, I'm going to paint you a picture. It's 10:30 in the evening, in the wintertime, in the mountains. It's cold. It's dark. It's very remote. And there stands a businesswoman dressed in loafers, slacks, a blouse, and a blazer. Not at all dressed for the occasion. And as soon as I get there, she comes up and she says, "Who's in charge?" And, you know, I'm pointed out, and she comes up to me and she goes, "You need to drop what you're doing, and all of you need to follow me down to this county road a few miles from here. Because at the end of this county road, there's a abandoned barn. And in this barn, there's a family of creatures called monkey bears, and you need to stop what you're doing and follow me right now." So if you had a strange businesswoman approach you in the middle of the forest and tell you to follow her down to an abandoned barn in the middle of nowhere, would you do it? Probably not. So, you know, I'm like, okay, so, you know, this is already really weird. I am not, following this strange woman, you know, down to get, you know, robbed or probed or whatever. It's just not going to happen. And I said, you know, "Thank you very much. No, you know, thanks for, you know, talking to us. We've got some stuff to do. Have a good evening." So I'm, you know, throwing out those social cues that, you know, I just don't want to deal with you. You know, the evening's over. We have stuff to do. Good night. Have a safe trip. And she wouldn't pick up on those social cues. She was very insistent, like she was almost trying to distract us, to keep us from doing our after-action review, to keep us from filming our interviews where we could capture this data while it was still fresh on everybody's mind. And she kept entering into our conversations with people. And she approached me, and she had some odd questions. She said, "Where did you go to university?" I said, "Well, I graduated from the University of West Georgia." And she goes, "Well, that's strange. I did too." I'm thinking that's very strange. She said, "What was your degree in?" I said, "Well, I have a BA in psychology." And she goes, "Well, me too." I thought to myself, okay, she's messing with me. So I'm going to trick her. I'm going to catch her. I said, "Okay, well, great. Who were some of your favorite professors while you were there?" And she actually named people I knew.
Yeah.
Actually, professors that I studied under.
So either she went there, or she'd been following you.
Yeah. So what are the odds of there being a businesswoman in the middle of the forest in the wintertime, 10:30 at night, that went to the same university I did, has the same degree I did, and knows the same professors I do? So, you know, what are the odds of that? They're pretty damn low, you know.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she just wouldn't pick up on the social cueing, and she seemed off. You know, she seemed odd. Something was just not right about her. And while we were trying to convince her to go on her way, she stepped away from our gathering while still just in the edge of the light of our lanterns, about, you know, 20 yards away, and she squat down and urinated in front of everybody like it was nothing.
Like the same way that you and I would do it, or
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it was a, you know, she was a female, so, you know, the logistics of that are a little bit different, but she did it in front of people, you know.
Well, I'm trying to distinguish whether or not she was human or alien, because I would think that all aliens go to the bathroom the same way, but so she was human.
Yeah, urinated like a human female. But what was really odd was people don't do that. You know, social niceties don't allow that. So, you know, she finally went on her way, and I was thinking about this several weeks later. You know, what group of people that come to prevalence after people experience high strangeness that are not properly dressed for the occasion, miss social cueing, seem off, and try to dissuade you or distract you from recounting the events.
Yeah.
It's the men in black or women in black. So turn the page. I get a phone call of all things from a psychotherapist in Istanbul, Turkey, or a message rather, a Facebook message. And this individual turns out also went to the University of West Georgia, and he just was contacting me because he had heard about my book, heard an interview, and he said he wanted to talk to me about some of the kind of a strange area in Carrollton, Georgia, where we went to college. And I was telling him about this this strange woman, you know, that claims that she went to the college. And he said, did she give you a name? I said, yes, she did give us a name. And we did do a little research, and that name does correspond to a person that resembles the person that, you know, we met. And they are in a profession that requires a license, you know, so we don't want to out this person or, you know, injure their profession in any way. And he said, would you mind telling me the name that this person gave you? And I told him, and he goes, my God, I know her. He goes, would you mind if I contacted her? I said, no, absolutely not. I would love to get to the bottom of this. So, you know, right now, my odds are, if this is a real person, either I encountered a professional woman having the absolute worst night of her life in the forest at 10 p.m. in the middle of nowhere.
It's a bad date.
It is. Yeah, she's, yeah, we've all had those. She's not what she thinks, says she is, i.e. she's not human. Or B, she's controlled by something. Something is controlling her.
Yeah.
And so he contacted her, and she says, I do remember going there. They seemed like there was something that they were hiding or did not want to disclose to me, which was accurate. And she goes, but I don't remember anything else being unusual about the encounter. So, you know, it sounds like something was controlling her or directing her movements. Because to her, you know, she didn't urinate. She didn't seem off. It was a normal conversation. And I passed on through this intermediary. I would love to talk to her. You know, I'm not interested in, you know, putting her name out there or, you know, anything like that. I would just, you know, I would really love to get to the bottom of it. And to this day, she has not acquiesced to talking to me. So, you know, yeah. maybe that will happen in the future.
All right. Any other mysterious beings that you've encountered out there in the meadow?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The evening of the February 2017, we had a team before they dropped down off of a ridge into the meadow. We had several teams moving around that evening. We saw some entities down in the extreme west end of the meadow. And what it was is they showed up on our FLIR unit, and we had seen a few animals. You know, they have a very different heat signature than, you know, a human being. And these heat signatures that we saw were similar to humans. They were about 6 foot tall, 24 inches wide. And we have video on our FLIR of these heat signatures being about 6 foot tall, shrinking down to 3 foot tall, going back up to 6 foot tall, shrinking down again, coming back up to 6 foot tall, and then turning into two entities and then disappearing. While we were filming the team entering into the portal, is one of our FLIR operators. We had one person filming the portal. We had another person filming and then scanning, and she turns over to our right, and she sees two heat signatures, 6 foot tall, 24 inches wide, watching us from a small copse of trees about 40 meters away. Like I said, we stay in radio communications. Nobody moves off their position unless they're given permission. These heat signatures did not correspond with any of our team members. So,
can you imagine a glowing light in the form of a being in the out there, and you think you're alone? Well, you're never really alone. I'm Jeremy Scott, High Strangeness, tonight on Into the Paranormal with my guest, Trey Hudson.
Make sure to subscribe to Into the Paranormal's free YouTube channel for shows, news, and exclusive reports. Call Into the Paranormal toll-free in North America at 855-790-8255. That's 855-790-TALK.
Jeremy Scott with Trey Hudson tonight. High Strangeness, our episode of Into the Paranormal. He's author of the book, The Meadow Project Explorations into the South's Skinwalker Ranch. A wide variety of paranormal and strange occurrences of what could be called high strangeness out at this public site about 4 acres east of Arizona. What was the other landmark, Trey?
South of the Mason-Dixon line.
South of the Mason-Dixon line. I guess that's all we're going to get out of you, huh?
Yeah. I'm sorry. But yeah, that's about it.
Talk about your team and about the other investigators and what it's taken literally to investigate these high strangeness events up to this point.
Sure. Yeah, I have a fantastic team. We have folks with backgrounds from the military, special operations, emergency medicine, you know, law enforcement. So these are folks that are used to dealing with stress. They're used to understanding how to take orders and how to do things in an organized and efficient manner. And they're used to things getting kind of crazy and being able to keep their composure and stay on task. These are very serious people. They're educated people. They're professional people. And more importantly, we're all people with the same vision and the same goals. So we can go out there and really... you know, have a plan, have a program, have a concept of operations, and execute it to the best of our abilities. We have one foot in the science world, you know, in the empirical data world, but we also have another foot in the experiential world. Many of our folks are trained as remote viewers, so we, you know, have a certain instinctual, you know, tie to the environment and the high strangeness. So it's a really, really unique team. And I'm privileged to be working with these absolutely outstanding individuals.
All right, so Bigfoot sightings, are those common on the property?
Yeah. We have two of the coolest things that have happened to us is I was briefing the team before one of our expeditions. I was in the meadow during the daytime, and upon review, we saw a... what appeared to be a cryptid watching us from the tree line. Now, this lurking, you know, from the tree line, lurking and watching is a pattern. You know, we see that at this site. So we had this this what appeared to be a cryptid watching us from the tree line as I was giving this briefing that showed up on the photographs. It only became apparent upon photographic review later on. We went back to the site. We could not find any trees or logs or anything that would explain, you know, this this what appeared to be a cryptid. One evening, late one night, a team member had gotten up to take care of some business about 2 a.m., and he saw a white humanoid-type figure once again watching our camp, which is interesting because you start digging through the folklore of this region, and there are stories of a white, hairy humanoid being reported, seen, and you know, and the tales passed down in this area. So, you know, that's you know, that's there. And then we have the, you know, the entities or heat signatures that we've seen watching us, you know, in the meadow itself. And we've also had had a FLIR footage of what appeared to be a large humanoid beast, you know, very broad-shouldered, no neck, standing at the edge of the meadow that we picked up on our FLIR. So, yeah, absolutely, there are quite a few experiences with, you know, large humanoid-type creatures, you know, in this area.
And other kinds of cryptid beasts, like you've seen the dogmen or any of those kinds of things?
You know, not something I would say dogman. I would say cryptid humanoids. You know, now, you know, there are some people in the cryptid world that say, you know, dogman is nothing more than a long-snouted Sasquatch. You know, so, you know, I'm going to be very careful about putting labels on things. I just use the term Sasquatch because, you know, people can kind of, you know, grasp that concept. But all I will say is, you know, the humanoid figures, possibly cryptid, you know, have been experienced by us. Absolutely.
Yeah. And of course, they may exist as well through or come through that portal, much like you entered the portal. They may come through that as well.
Right. Absolutely. And that was something that was very interesting is we, you know, when we had the incident with the portal, you know, we had multiple sightings of these two entities that picked up on our FLIR. So, you know, we think there might have been a correlation between those entities and the portal.
Any success with being able to summon UFOs or the presence of UFOs like on the spot?
Interesting you should say that. We do utilize from time to time the Greer protocol, the CE5 protocol, you know, Stephen Greer's techniques. And we did have a very interesting experience where we had done the CE5 protocol and didn't see anything. You know, we were absolutely stumped. Went back to camp. The next morning, one of my team members approached me, and this team member, I'll give you a little bit about his background. He's a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy with a degree in engineering, spent several years in U.S. Air Force Special Operations, and is an expert in his field and works as a consultant all over the world. And he said, Trey, he goes, I had these words pop into my mind last night about 4:30 in the morning. These two words just popped into my mind, and the words were Nox Magbe, and phonetically spelled NOXMAGBEE, Nox Magbe. And he said at 06:30, the words once again popped awake, and the words were there again. He says, do they mean anything to you? And I said, well, no, not at all. I've never heard those words before in my life, but I will research them, which I did. And it turns out the word Nox, N-O-X, is Latin. It's was the Roman name for the goddess of the night, which is a derivative of the Greek Nyx, the goddess of the night. Magbe turned out to be a little bit more elusive. I found the word magba in the Old English poem Beowulf. Now, Old English was spoken right at the end of the Roman occupation of Britain, so the people speaking Old English would have some knowledge of Romans, god, and goddesses. So the term Nox and magba are contemporaneous. So you put these two words together. Oh, the word magba means kindred or children. So you have children of the night goddess. So what comes to people in the middle of the night that are small like children and have enlarged heads like children that have something to do with UFOs? I'll give you a hint. One of them is on the cover of Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, The Grays.
And the significance of that again, Trey?
Well, the significance is right after we did the CE5 protocol that previous evening, one of my team members had this download of terms that can be translated to refer to the grays. So there was, you know, we did not see craft like you often do when doing the CE5 protocol, but we were interact and have communications in a very different way. And that's something about this site is it throws us curveballs. You know, when we think we've got it figured out or we have our, you know, kind of have an idea of what the phenomenon is going to be, it throws us something from left field. Last time we were out there, one of my team members was many, many miles, you know, hundreds of miles away from the site. And on her way home, her vehicle completely lost all electrical power. Completely dead. So where have we heard about vehicles driving along in remote areas losing power? You know, there's numerous, you know, UFO accounts of that, usually during an abduction or something like that.
Usually accompanied by a case of missing time.
Absolutely. So, you know, this site, you know, these phenomena are starting to become more holistic, you know, more in depth, more granular, the more we investigate. You know, it's just not just merely seeing things in the woods now. It's starting to affect us on a very personal level and starting to affect us when we're away from the site.
In what way?
Well, you know, for example, you know, the team members, you know, vehicle dying several miles, you know, several hundred miles away from the meadow. I've had things disappear in my home. You know, things that I'll set on a table, I'll come back, they'll be gone. A few hours later, I'll come back and they've reappeared. You know, things like that, like a jokester or a trickster element to it. We've had team members have nightmares of people being in their home and watching over them while they sleep. You know, things coming in through their windows.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's a whole other layer of this, a phenomena that's going on that, you know, we hope to get into, and maybe with hypnotic regression. I just have to find a therapist that's willing to talk to some of my team members. So it's more than following things that go bump in the night. In the woods, it's much more in depth than that.
Do you think there's a chance people are just stumbling upon this location, unbeknownst to them, and experiencing some of this phenomena?
Oh, it could be. You know, it could be. You know, that could be one of the reasons this area has a folklore. And what really kind of turned me onto this area years ago was hearing about local folklore, and it had to do with it's not very close to the meadow, but it's you know, in the same nature preserve, is the locals talking about a haunted road. You know, don't go down this road at night. You know, don't go down there, them haints will get you, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just really intrigued me, and that's what got me looking into this area and subsequently allowed me to discover the meadow. So, yeah, I think this stuff has been going on for many, many years, and the more I investigate it and research, I keep hearing very strange stories of this, you know, this particular nature preserve over and over again. So, yeah, people have been stumbling across this for probably generations.
Any idea how much of missing time can be accounted for? Or unaccounted for?
We did have one team member that had probably about 30 minutes missing time. He arrived at a location on the trail leading to the meadow. We were going to have him do a solo trek on the top of a ridge to see if he could rustle anything up or push anything down into the meadow. And he reached a particular landmark and did not remember getting there. What was interesting is when he reviewed his GPS track the next day, is his GPS track showed several straight lines of several kilometers each, you know, going from like point A to point B, point B to point C, point C to point D, straight lines. But you can't travel in a straight line over this terrain, either on foot or by vehicle. The only way you can travel in a straight line is in the air. But yet his GPS showed him having traveled in straight lines in places he didn't remember being.
Yeah, I would say that something was definitely strange afoot there. Have you seen like the weird flashes of lights on this property? And if the answer is yes, what usually accompanies that?
Absolutely. I have personally seen them. My team members have seen them. I have seen everything from glowing orbs. I personally have seen white orbs and red orbs. One orb was so spectacular that I was with three other team members, and I said, "Who is that? You know, that's standing, you know, 18 feet above us on that ridge, shining a headlamp at us. That's not not one of our team members." And I said, "Is everybody here?" We looked around, and it was everybody. And I said, "Okay, well, who did I just see?" And nobody was there. You know, we took our FLIR units, we scanned the area. There was nobody there, but I saw a very bright red, you know, orb or light. My base camp operator has seen green orbs, actually so brilliant that he thought that we were coming back into base camp via a new route over a ridge, and he was commenting on why we were coming over the ridge using green headlamps. So he saw green orbs. I have personally seen brilliant white flashes of light deep in the forest, almost as though somebody was setting off a strobe deep in the forest that illuminated the trees around it. You can go back and look at some of the MUFON reports, and people have reported the same thing. We have numerous reports from our team members, and I've witnessed this myself, and we're trying in earnest to capture this on film and haven't been able to yet, is small, like little tiny flashes of light deep in the woods, almost like a firefly or lightning bug. But this isn't the dead of winter, so there are no lightning bugs, you know, so little sparkles, you know, throughout the woods like that. So yeah, there's quite a bit of a, you know, quite a bit of an anomalous light show going on in this area.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we've heard about those lights over the years that usually accompany many of these other phenomena. So the when you see the orbs, that you know, you could, you know, see a Bigfoot, or you could see a UFO, or you could see a dogman, or these other kind of you know, cryptids or hybrids, situations. Was this ever talked about in the course of your military service? Is any sort of these strange phenomena?
You know, that's kind of neat you should ask that. I'm probably one of the few government or military guys whose military or government career had absolutely nothing to do with this kind of stuff. You know, I've never been on any UFO, you know, research organization. I've never been on any kind of investigative panel for UFOs, you know, while I've worked for the government. So no, not at all. Not at all. And strangely enough, the government doesn't seem too particularly interested in this area, you know, or, you know, what I'm doing. They sort of leave me alone and let me do my stuff.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you start having those encounters, you know, with such as the woman or maybe some others as strange as that one was, maybe you'll start to reconsider. But
well, I'll keep going as long as they let me.
Yeah. Well, Trey, I really appreciate you you coming on the program tonight and sharing this location with us. I tend to believe that there are probably more of these locations out there. I mean, there has to be. That's when it really gets fascinating, when you're able to tell if this is, you know, a particular region, or if there's, you know, a fault line, or if there's a body of water near where right. These are located.
Absolutely. That is, we have done that in this, this kind of micro area. We've looked at, you know, where things are going on. There doesn't really seem to be much of a correlation, you know, between bodies of water or not. And I did mention that I've been talking to people that are looking at, you know, almost forming a, you know, high strangeness A team, if you will. And hopefully we can get this team together and go out and start looking at these various points of high strangeness throughout the country and start trying to pin down some of these correlations like you were talking about, see if there's certain things that overlap and commonalities and start putting the picture together.
Yeah. And so tell us about where the folks can find you on the internet and where they can pick up the book, and if they're interested in finding more about you, where do they go?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. The you can find me on Amazon. The just the easiest way to do is just to type my name into the search thing, Trey Hudson. We have the book in hardcover, softcover, ebook, and audiobook. Personally, I think the ebook for about $5 is a heck of a deal. So if y'all are interested, go ahead and give it a peek. You can go and find me on Facebook at TreyHudson-author. Or you can also go to the Oxford Paranormal Society's group page there on Facebook.
All right, fantastic. So best to you, Trey.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's Trey Hudson. And again, the name of the book, The Meadow Project, Explorations into the South's Skinwalker Ranch. After hearing the events there and the events that Katie was telling us about last week from UFO Fest in McMinnville, we're starting to see a pattern here. It's been a well-documented pattern. It's certainly not a new phenomenon in any way, but we are definitely starting to see more reports of these locations with strange phenomena. Clusters, there's something going on here. We have these regions throughout the country where people go missing, where people step through a portal and don't come out, and you know, don't come out the same on the other side. Into the paranormal will continue. I'm Jeremy Scott. We will be right back, friends.
Abnormal News. I'm Brad Bernards. By diligently tracing dashcam footage from a particularly spectacular fireball seen over Central Europe in February 2020, a team of scientists identified the possible source of the space rock. Space.com reports the fireball was recorded by a handful of cameras, and the footage appeared to show a space rock breaking into 17 smaller pieces during an airburst event when an asteroid survives the harsh passage through Earth's atmosphere but explodes before hitting the planet's surface. So the scientists recruited local residents to photograph the same landmarks that appear in the videos, combining the fireball footage, the sky images, and footage of a known light source. The path suggests the meteor may hail from a near-Earth asteroid, although the scientists aren't sure. Lucy in the Sky with Asteroids.
The Lucy mission, launching 2 weeks from today, will be a first-of-its-kind expedition to the Trojan asteroids. Principal Investigator Hal Levinson says the spacecraft will fly by never-before-seen asteroids.
But in order to understand what they're telling us about the history of the solar system, we have to understand the diversity and study the diversity. And that's exactly what Lucy is going to do.
It will be the first spacecraft to return to Earth from the outer solar system. Lori Glaze, director of NASA's Planetary Science Division, says there are major implications for the mission.
By studying the Trojan asteroids, we can gain more insight into the history of the outer solar system and the giant planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune.
Lucy's first close-up is set for the year 2025. Over a 12-year span, it will investigate at least 8 asteroids in separate orbits around our sun. Daniel Brewer, Paranormal News.
Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
Do you think this is done by humans?
I have no idea.
UFO sightings to cattle mutilations.
That phenomenon is still happening out there, and mutilations are still taking place.
Do you think it's some kind of ritual that they're using them for? Because they don't take mass quantities.
Are these bovine mysteries easily explainable, or is this evidence of an extraterrestrial existence?
We do have a cow, and it is mutilated.
This phenomenon has been happening for decades, but is there an answer?
To the Paranormal, somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
All right, it's 855-790-8255. That's 855-790-TALK or 8255 in North America. outside North America, 503-506-0396. That's 503-506-0396. It's you and I and the rest of us for the final part of the program here. If you want to ring through on Skype as well, you can just click the button at ParanormalRadio.com. Put us into your Skype favorites, ITP51. That's how you can sound really, really, really good, as if you do it through Skype. But you can call us. It's good either way. You know, there's been some cattle mutilations going on here in Oregon. We've had some of those out in the eastern part of the state. And these are obviously expensive parts of people's herd that, you know, come up gutted. And in many cases, there's a lot of blood, right? But there's seemingly precision in the way that the parts are removed. But there certainly is not a pool of blood, as you would expect. And it seems to be that whoever is going in for the kill, the predator, knows exactly what they're going for, and they do it with precision, and they go in and they gut these things, and it costs ranchers and farmers, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. There was one in particular, $4,500 is what a farmer said. He was out at out in Wheeler County here in Oregon. That was just from one cattle mutilation. Took its nose and tongue and left cheek and ear and eye, along with the reproductive organs and part of its tail, all with clean cuts. So the authorities come and investigate, and when you start telling the authorities, well, I believe, you know, that extraterrestrials could have done this, they probably start to take a step or two back, but you really have to put all options on the table. Is this some sort of, you know, predator that we just don't know of, or that we wouldn't suspect, I guess maybe is the other thing. But then you tell me what can take over these animals that weigh hundreds of pounds. And apparently the FBI says it's not just Oregon, but there have been thousands of these killings and mutilations of cattle over the years throughout the United States. And I'm certain you'll probably find a report in your state if you did a search online for cattle mutilation reports, because they certainly are very widespread. I have a feeling that this might be my favorite caller in the whole history of the world. I have a feeling this is Jen in Minnesota. Am I correct?
You are wrong, sir. This is Dan in Minnesota.
Oh. Well.
How you doing?
It was a 50-50 chance, right?
It was a 50-50 chance. You know what? Real quick, I just got two questions for you. First, have you ever heard of the chupacabra making it as far north as, say, like Oregon and Washington and states of those nature?
No, I have not. You usually hear of those that down in you know, South America, part
right,
of the world.
Right, yeah, more southern areas. But, and then the other question was, so, you know, if it's not the chupacabra that could be causing these things like the cattle mutilations and such, you know, what purpose would UFOs or whatever have you, what purpose would they have mutilating these animals, these cattle and such? And, you know, if it's not UFOs, I mean, have we really thought about what it could truly be and why it's doing that? So I'll let you go, and I'll listen to you on the radio there, Jer.
Yeah, I have no idea why. That is a very interesting question. I can only guesstimate on the why. And I don't necessarily think that it's UFOs per se, but it could be something that is related to UFOs. In the case that they could be dropped off, or they could be attracted to. That's the thing that I've talked about, in which why there could be a connection between some of these events, Bigfoot, you know, UFOs, other cryptids, and it could just be that they are attracted by each other's presence, or it could be that they are dropped off because there certainly have been a lot of reports over the years of those going hand in hand. But that's all I can guesstimate on that. I will say, for those who are interested, we've got a lot of good stuff coming up throughout the month of October here. We've got many shows that we'll be doing over the coming weeks that will tickle your fancy if you're interested in ghosts and stories of haunted locations and ghostly encounters. And if you like hearing EVPs, and if you just get into all that sort of thing, we've got you covered over the coming weeks here on this program. So just make sure you stick around for that. So that will do it for the program tonight, friends. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. Good night, everyone. Oh.